Next case on our calendar, 07-1570, Butler County Bar Association and the Disciplinary Council versus Clifford Scott Portman. Mr. Matthews.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, may it please the court. I'm Alvin Matthews, and I'm here on behalf of the respondent, Clifford Portman. And at the outset, I'd like to reserve five minutes of my time for rebuttal. Thank you. This case presents an opportunity for the court to carry out its mission in the lawyer disciplinary system of protecting the public. We believe that an indefinite suspension is warranted in this case, rather than the sanction of disbarment that's recommended by the Master Commissioner and the Board. We set forth a two-part argument. First, the court has granted our motion to supplement the record, and we would respectfully suggest that the information provided attached to that motion should be given some weight in these proceedings.
Let me ask you about the record that you'd submitted for our consideration. There's an allegation in there that there's a mental condition here. Has there been a diagnosis?
Well, the only suggestion, we're not submitting that information in the classic sense of mitigation, whereby we are trying to prove diagnosis, treatment, nexus, and prognosis. That's the classic sense in which that type of evidence is presented. We simply wanted the court to know that he signed an OLAP contract, that he is going to seek treatment, but we did not want to overreach and collaterally attack the record that has been established in this case. We simply wanted the court to know, and that's the purpose of our suggesting an indefinite suspension in this case. We want the court to leave the door open for this respondent to apply in the future for readmission to the practice, and we submitted the evidence.
I understand what you're asking for, but you have a client who failed to cooperate across the board, correct?
That's correct.
And now he's coming before us and saying, I want to supplement the record. I want you to grant some sort of consideration, and here's the reasons why. And one of those allegations is a mental condition, which has not been explained in the record. Now, I'm supposing that he's using that as an excuse for not cooperating or communicating with the relators here. So what I'm asking you is there a mental condition that has been diagnosed and is utilized as an underpinning for his failure to cooperate?
Well, that's not a part of the record, and we didn't want to come and talk about that, but if you're asking me that question, I can answer it. And yes, there is a diagnosis.
By a medical physician?
Yes. Again, we didn't want to go that far in terms of presenting a mental condition as mitigation. We simply wanted to open the door to this respondent to apply in the future for reinstatement. Our second argument will be that an indefinite suspension in this case is more appropriate than disbarment when a lawyer comes forward, even belatedly, to give the type of information that's been given here. And as the court will note, part of that information is restitution, payment of efforts of restitution to the victims of his misconduct. As to our first argument regarding giving the supplemented evidence some weight, we will acknowledge disciplinary counsel's argument, and it's a good argument, that we don't want to create a precedent here. The court would not want to give broad discretion for any respondent coming forward to be able to do this, to just come in at the 11th hour, offer information, and have the court take that and run with it. And then, of course, a respondent would take it to the next step and collaterally attack the work that's already been done by disciplinary counsel, the master commissioner, and the board. That's a legitimate concern. That is a legitimate concern. We didn't do that here, and we would hope that respondents would not do that. If a respondent does not participate in the proceedings, that respondent should not come forward and try to attack findings. That respondent, we would respectfully submit, should, however, be given the opportunity to say, well, we've paid back the money, for example, because the court wants that done. That promotes protection of the public. We all know that the client security fund is overtaxed, and oftentimes victims are not paid back funds. So lawyers ought to be encouraged to come forward and say, at any point in the proceedings, I've paid the money back, and will you consider that in your sanction?
I think the other problem we have, Mr. Matthews, is that assuming that your client has some sort of a mental condition, we have no idea whether it had anything to do with his conduct, whether it caused his conduct, which, as you know, if there had been a panel hearing in which that had been presented, there could have been a thorough examination of cause and effect. But to just say, well, he has a mental condition, and I guess ask us to kind of leave the door open for him when we have no idea what it is or its effect on his conduct is a broad reach, it seems to me.
That's an excellent point, Your Honor, but as the court well knows, in Ohio, disbarment is permanent. You disbar the lawyer, throw away the key. Indefinite suspension, however, is a minimum of 2-year suspension, but by the time the lawyer reapplies, it's normally about 3 years. And then at that point in time, the lawyer has an obligation. They have the burden of proving present fitness to practice. So the lawyer will have to apply. It's not like a term suspension where it becomes they serve their suspension and if everything else is in order that they can be readmitted. So the respondent would be able to, at that point, to reapply, put the medical evidence forward, and prove at that point his present fitness to practice. So we're not raising an inference here that doesn't have to be answered later. The respondent would be obligated at some later point to come forward with that evidence. And I think that provides the protection
counsel,
in this case.
There's two parts to this mental illness discussion. One is that that was the nexus to the behavior that brings us here today, and the failure to cooperate. And then, of course, the issue is the severity and whether or not the public needs to be protected from the individual. But you're giving us information that you want us to consider, which is that restitution has been made here, and you want that to be in the plus column when we're evaluating this case. And yet, you're not making representations that we're submitting any information to us that allows us to take into consideration the effect or the type of mental illness that we're talking about and its relationship to why we're here. You're saying 3 years from now you can learn about that, court, when you are asked to reinstate him if we do an indefinite suspension. But I differ with your pronouncement here that we don't need to be concerned with that at this particular time. I think it's extremely germane to what we're doing here.
Well, I understand your concern. My point is that the system is protected. The purpose of the system is to protect the public and the integrity of the courts, and the system is protected by the fact that an indefinite would be imposed, which would require this lawyer to come forward and to show. And we're not suggesting that you move from disbarment to a 2-year suspension or a 1-year suspension. We're saying an indefinite suspension. And as this court knows from the history, it's very difficult to come back and practice law from an indefinite suspension. The lawyer has to walk the straight and narrow. The lawyer would have to receive treatment. The lawyer would have to continue to do their CLE and get that up to date. They'd have a lot of hurdles to come over. And in this case, since we're raising this issue, the court would obviously come back, revisit this issue, and he would have to prove that he treated, that he did that successfully for a prolonged period. He would have to prove nexus in order to come back, and he would have to prove a good prognosis that he can return to the competent, ethical, and professional practice of law. We believe that the respondent supplemented appropriately in this case, and we were very careful not to go too far. I mean, obviously, if the information's available as to what the diagnosis is and nexus and so forth, you can try to put that in, but that's somewhat unfair to the relator in that they've tried the case, they've tried to reach the respondent, he didn't respond, the board heard the case, and then you come in at the 11th hour and you collaterally attack everything.
Counsel, you're very experienced in this area. What do you think tipped the scales in favor of disbarment instead of indefinite? We see a lot of cases where a client has taken some money to do work and doesn't do the work and isn't available, and those usually aren't disbarment. Is it the presenting a bill to the county for reimbursement for attorney fees and alleging that his client is indigent and hasn't been paid? Do you think that was it, or was it the failure to cooperate, or was it both those together that tipped this over the line?
I think that's a good question, Your Honor. I think the panel's report did characterize that act as theft, and also as taking money from clients and not doing the work as theft. But what we've seen from this court, and there are indefinite suspension cases on the one hand, and we've cited some of those in our brief, and there are disbarment cases, and sometimes you can't really distinguish the conduct, you know, and why this court is indefinitely suspending some lawyers and disbarring others. But as for this case, we would think that it would be the conduct coupled with the fact that the lawyer doesn't answer at all, because had the lawyer come up and given some explanation, the court, the board, and the master, well, it wouldn't have been a master commissioner, it would have been a panel, but the board would have been able to evaluate that.
Well, the court and reflecting the court, the board does seem to bend over backwards where mental health seems to be involved, or where a big degree of dependency, substance abuse is involved. If the person is showing a willingness to address that, it would seem to me, a failure to cooperate really made him a dead duck in terms of whatever they were going to recommend. But the asking the county to pay him when the client has already paid him, and in those cases, he didn't do any work, right? He double billed for no work. That seems to take this a little further than some that we see, doesn't it?
Well, it is serious conduct. We've had serious conduct in other cases where this court has issued an indefinite suspension. It is, however, I acknowledge serious conduct, but the important thing that we should acknowledge here is he has paid that money back to the county, and that's one of the reasons why he thought it was important to do that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Matthews. Ms. Costa.
Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, my name is Carol Costa on behalf of Disciplinary Counsel, and with me is Richard Hyde and Michael Moser of the Butler County Bar Association, with whom I'll be dividing my time. I agree with Mr. Matthews in that this case presents an opportunity for this court to carry out its mission. But as was pointed out, the only way the court can do that is based on what's in the record. Here, the facts of this case and the violations have not been challenged. Respondent took money from clients without doing any work, which is misappropriation, theft, for which this court has ruled repeatedly deserves the highest sanction available. Respondent lied to his clients about work.
Counsel, we don't always disbar for that, do we?
That's correct, Your Honor. And in the case, but the cases cited by respondent in his brief contain mitigation evidence. There isn't mitigation here, not based on the record as it is now.
The You have co-counsel of the Butler County Bar Association. Presumably, they know this lawyer. Do they? Are they of the view there's just no hope for him? There's no place, even if he's if he has a mental health issue and gets treatment, is he someone who should forever be unwelcome in the practice of law, or is there some potentiality for hope if he gets the treatment?
Well, Your Honor, our position is, again, based on the record the way it is, that disbarment is appropriate. But having said that, since you did allow the motion to supplement, and he brought up this issue of this undisclosed mental condition, and provided these checks, which presumably we don't know, we're assuming they were sent and received by the clients. If you want to get into that further, I think the appropriate approach would be to send it back to the board on the issue of mitigation alone. The facts and the violations are set. But that way, we can delve into this, and if it is a legitimate mitigation evidence for which he...
So you think that would be better than us buying into the notion that there may be some redeeming quality worthy of another chance down the road?
Absolutely, Your Honor, because the affidavit of respondent talking about his undisclosed medical condition does not in any way, shape, or form comply with the rules for mitigation. There also has to be a timely good faith restitution for that to qualify as mitigation. Here he sent the checks, allegedly, to the clients the day before his brief was due, when a year and a half before, in testimony of the Bar Association, before the Bar Association.
Presumably, at some point in time, he got to Mr. Matthews, and Mr. Matthews straightened him out on what was going to have to be required, or else the death penalty was going to be for sure.
I'm hoping that's the case, Your Honor. But all I'm saying is, based on the record before you today, as it stands, there isn't the mental condition, and we don't believe that it's a timely good faith restitution. And since based on these facts, without mitigation, disbarment is appropriate. But in fairness to everybody, respondent, relators, and the court in making its decision, obviously disbarment is the most severe sanction and it's not lightly handed out. Perhaps the best approach would be to send it back to the board for development of this issue on the mitigation alone. Because quite honestly, if this turns out to be a valid mental condition that caused the misconduct for which he's seeking treatment and he has a good prognosis, and there's nothing strange about the restitution, we may very well agree that an indefinite is appropriate. And depending on when the case is heard, we may recommend something else.
But right now,
the record is the way it is.
Thank you for your candor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Is there precedent for remanding this back to the board, cases back to the board?
Not that I'm aware of, Your Honor, but I think under the Justice Stratton's aware of some. Yeah. But I think in fairness that would be an appropriate situation given that the motion to supplement was permitted. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Costa. Mr. Hyde.
Morning, Mr. Chief Justice and the other members of this court. May it please the court. My name is Richard Hyde, along with Michael Moser. We represent co-relator Butler County Bar Association. I agree with Ms. Costa with this respect. This case is, when we became involved in this, as Mr. Moser and I are co-chair of the Butler County Bar Association. We conducted the hearing that happened in March of 06 in the county courthouse in Butler County with Mr. Portman. And when this case was sent up to the board, Carol Costa took it over, and I think the first two counts were hers. I asked her if I could tag along. She's probably regretting that fact now because of the position that we've taken in this case. But we felt the position that we took in this case with respect to allowing the mitigation evidence, based on the unique circumstances of this case, where I had to put a call into Mr. Portman because we were concerned about maybe some suicidal ideation, which I outlined in our brief. Based on that situation, I found myself, when I talked to Mr. Portman, encouraging him to get his lawyer. I was glad that he got an attorney, especially an attorney of caliber, Mr. Matthews. who I've seen speak at the Bar Associ- at the Grievance Committee annual seminars that's conducted. I found myself encouraging him and take a position denying the mitigation evidence that he wanted to present to this court so you could make your decision, I felt would be inappropriate, and that's why I wanted to explain myself, and that's why I asked for to divide the time with Ms. Costa in this case. Remaining the case back down to for further consideration, we have no objection with that. With respect to what you ultimately do with this case, we take no position. Maybe that's our training. When I was an assistant prosecutor in Butler County for a number of years, it was always our position at sentencing time that we standed silent. We did not make recommendations. And I did that for 11 years, and the only time we would do something like that would be in a death penalty case. But other than that, we always left it up to the judge, and that's what we're doing in this case. And also, had Mr. Matthews presented evidence as to the depression or the whatever mental condition it was, I would not have objected to that either, because I think you folks need, this court needs full information so they can make their decision on what to do with Mr. Portman.
Well, since we're sort of going off the record here a bit, do you or your co-counsel have any reason to believe that if Mr. Portman was a successful patient in mental health rehabilitation, whatever it is, that he could be an active member of the bar?
I believe that's a possibility. I don't know that much about Mr. Portman. He's not a friend of mine. I've seen him in court a couple times. He mostly took appointed cases. I've seen him in the municipal court, but it's just enough to say hi. I don't
know his reputation.
I don't know his reputation. I don't know whether he's a good attorney or a bad attorney, or I do know that he was asleep until he just recently woke up when he hired Mr. Matthews, and the question is, did he wake up in time? And in order to make that decision, we wanted all the facts before you, and that's why we took the position that we did. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hyde. Mr. Matthews, you've saved a minute and a half.
We obviously would not object to Ms. Costa's suggestion of sending this matter back to the board for further consideration. If that happens, we're confident that we can present mitigating evidence in this particular case. The question is, does the court want to do that? Does the court want to make a practice of doing that? We certainly believe that it's appropriate in this case. For the reasons that we've stated here.
Counsel, before you close here, are you confident that your client would cooperate if there is a remand for the mitigation hearing that the board would have to conduct?
He seems certainly to have turned the corner in that regard, and he seems committed to cooperating, as he's indicated in his affidavit, and moving forward. So yes, I am confident that.
And he would submit to a psychiatric examination for mental condition?
As I indicated in answer to Justice O'Connor's question, he's already done that.
At the direction of the board?
He would certainly do it at the direction of the board.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.